All right. Welcome back, everybody. Let's see where we left off. I believe we were item number six, C6. Is that correct, John?
I think Armando, we still need to do item number four if Makita's on the line.
Oh, I apologize.
And then we can let them go after that.
Yeah. I think at least Aaron should be on the line. You guys there?
Yeah, this is Aaron. Okay. You guys ready?
Yep.
Yes, we're John, ready to go.
John, if you could go to 84, please. I guess 2 pages prior, 84. On the written number. Yeah, great. So, as always, we've got a very lengthy quarterly performance report with a lot of information and statistics. I will try to be brief, famous last words, just hit some of the high notes. So, for the first quarter, this is the executive summary. You see some green and some red. The fund was up about 2% in the first quarter. This was behind your policy benchmark and behind peers. So policy benchmark was 2.6, peers were 3.3. Overall, the results were, from your manager perspective, were mixed. If you see the gray line towards the middle, half of your public managers beat their benchmarks, half did not. From an asset allocation perspective, your underweights to non-U.S. bonds helped, but it was another quarter where public equities did well and being underweight hurt. If you see that part where it says DPFP, public markets versus 60-40, so that strips out all your private market investments and compares the results against the 60-40 portfolio. So if you look at it that way, your public managers easily exceeded the 60-40, 2.4 versus 1.2. Can you go to the next page, please? So here we stretch the time period out over the trailing 12 months. And this is a unique 12 months because this was pretty much the rally from the depths of the COVID sell-off. And so these are 12 months of pretty much a straight up and to the right positive equity market environment. So over those 12 months, while your fund was positive 11%, that was materially below the policy index and peers. So positive 10%, but your index, your benchmark, was up over 30%, as were peers. So a really big gap there in terms of the results versus benchmark and versus, you know, a traditional peer plan. In a second, I'm going to show you kind of the gap of where that 20% came from. But I will highlight again that line towards the bottom of your public markets versus your 60-40. So your public markets, again, this is stripping out the alternatives, were up almost 33% versus a 60-40. And you had less than 60% equity in that hypothetical portfolio. So, you know, it's encouraging to see that the part of the portfolio that trustees and staff and Makita has more control over seems to be working well. You know, and we're still working hard to kind of minimize the impact of the legacy and alternative assets. So if you go forward to, I think it's 96, It's a page that says attribution effects on the 1 year. Keep going. One more. Okay, 100. So as I mentioned, this will show you the source of that, call it 20% underperformance versus policy benchmark. So the vertical black line, if your total plan performance was on the vertical black line, you would have matched your policy benchmark and been in the 30% range on the trailing 1 year. So the green and the blue decompose the sources of return and where you fell short or where you outperformed. You can see, though, most are to the left. Green is the impact of the managers, and blue is the impact of being not at your target weight. So at the top line, you could argue it's was about half manager driven and half allocation driven. And the big chunk is in that green part. So one manager, Huff, you know, you had a huge write up in a prior year, and then in this environment, a significant write down. So that alone is almost 10 percentage points of the underperformance. You go down to real estate and infrastructure, you see, you know, together that's another 5 or 8 percentage points. So it's these you know, these legacy assets that really are hurting things. You look to the middle of the page, you see most of those blues and greens and oranges really close to the line, and most kind of to the right. So that's an indication that your managers in those public asset classes are doing fine, and the marginal kind of overweights and underweights were generally helpful in that year. And then finally is public equities. So you see the global equity line and the emerging market equity line. So those blues to the left. So in an environment like the last 12 months, you know, the best place to be was in the stock market. So your underperformance you were definitely impacted by not having your target weight in the public equities. And you can see roughly about a four percentage point hit and maybe a 3 percentage point hit for global equity and EM equity, respectively. But it was really those other drivers that were the biggest impacts. So, you know, we would have loved to have been able to have full public equity weight during this tremendous rally, but that wasn't the biggest driver of the underperformance. I think I'll end it there unless there's any questions or comments or concerns. Okay, Leo, are you on? Okay, I guess not. So I will run with the next part of just a brief overview of the private markets portfolio. So we'll stay right there, John, please. So at the end of the calendar year, this is your exposure by market value. So this donut chart hasn't changed much. It's still roughly half real estate. The next biggest chunk is in private equity, and then the remainder in what we'll call different real assets. And you go 2 pages forward, please. You can see this is the summary table indicating, and this is just the active investments, so any fund that was made and fully liquidated is not included here. But this is the active investments you still have. So you can see towards the right in the bottom gray, and again, these numbers don't change materially quarter to quarter, but a TVPI of 1.03 basically means that if all these funds are able to liquidate at current values, you would essentially get your money back. So if you invested a dollar, you would get back in total $1.03. So naturally, you know, if you're pretty much, that means an IRR or performance of close to zero, so 0.4. If you look up, you can see, and you heard from Hancock last time, that the Hancock IRR over a multi-decade period has been extremely strong. Basically about 15% return per year. That's what that IRR means. It's just been those other places that have been real significant anchors to the performance.
Aaron, can you talk quickly about what's updated as of Q4 in this report and what is still stale valuation-wise?
Sure. So the Lone Star investments are still based off of the prior year valuation from Conway McKenzie, and the Huff investments are still as of the 9/30/2020. I think everything else is true fourth quarter statement.
Yeah, I mean, Huff and Lone Star make up 95% of the private equity portfolio, so everything else is updated, and vast majority of private equity, we're still waiting on valuation to come in.
Yep. So if there's no questions, that, I guess, concludes our remarks today, and we look forward to wrapping up the asset allocation conversation in July.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Alan. Thank you very much, Alan, Ryan. And please pass along to Leo our apologies for having to call an audible, but we appreciate Ross' flexibility today.
No problem. Moving on
to item number six. I believe. Is that right, Kelly?
That is right.
Okay.
So what I'd like to say on this item is the statute actually specifically says that the board must elect officers in June of odd number years. So we need to have a motion today to elect officers. And just to remind you that last August when Bill Quinn's term on the board ended, the mayor convinced him somehow to stay on the board. He wasn't going to. And Bill said that he would stay on the board. He was happy to stay on the board, but he only wanted to be the chair until December. And then he decided that, you know, he would be the chair until June, but he no longer wants to be the chair. And he is reaching out to some other trustees to talk about the officer positions and hasn't been able to do that yet, and obviously he and Nick aren't on the call today. So what we'd like to do is have a motion today, if you're all agreeable to this, to just extend re-elect the officer terms, the officer positions that the trustees already hold for one more month, and then in July come back with officer elections again. We can do it every month if we wanted. I don't recommend that, but we just at least have to do it in June of odd number years. Does that make sense? Any questions?
No, it makes sense. Mark, Malva, I'd make that motion.
Yeah, I second Gilbert. Yeah, we get it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Mark and Gilbert, any discussion? Anybody opposed? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to the next item. Item number seven, legislative update. And Kelly, you want to provide that?
Josh, actually, will you do that for me?
Yeah, absolutely. So the legislative session is over, as you all know. The legislature will go into a special session to cover some items, none of which directly affect DPFP. The two bills that we are directly affected by both passed both houses and are soon coming up on a point in time when the governor will either have to sign them or veto them, otherwise they become law, so we fully expect them both to become law. HB 3375, Representative Davis's bill, which provides basically that anybody who has a drop annuity can now, once it becomes effective September 1st, can then apply for a hardship distribution. That will come into effect. That would not really require any changes on our part. That simply opens up the universe of people that can make a request for a hardship distribution. The second bill that we expect to become law is HB 4068. That would give the board the ability to elect to put the system employees into the Texas Municipal Retirement System retirement plan. And we would expect to come back to the board at a future meeting with more details with respect to that. The other bill that passed that does potentially affect DPFP, it may not, we're actually not sure, is HB 3898. That did pass as well and also likely will become law. That tightens up some of the requirement that if plans are not funded to a certain level, it requires the plan and the city to come together and come up with a funding soundness restoration plan, which basically requires you to put together a plan that provides for amortization of the plan to years to fund to get to 25 years or less. What is interesting is that the bill provisions now say that if the plan is the funding level exceeds 30 years to fund for three straight years, then you're required to get to this funding restoration plan. We would likely fall within that, or I think maybe we've already fallen in that. But our current statute is sort of in contradiction to that. And as Kelly talked about a little bit earlier, you know, as hopefully you all know, we've got the provisions where the PRB picks an actuary and there's an actuarial study done in 2024. And then if we're not projected to be at these funding levels, then the board's required to make changes. And it's a process that's set up to ultimately conclude in the 2025 legislative session. So it appears that the two statutes may well be in conflict. We haven't looked at it in great detail to see how that's going to come out. I expect that we will, over the next couple months, have discussions with the PRB, as they would be involved in both of these statutes. They're supposed to pick the actuary on our statute, and they're the ones that are going to report the systems that are in have gotten to the point where they need to get entered into these funding soundness restoration plans with the city. So I expect we'll have discussions with them and try to get a better feel for what they believe, how this is supposed to work. And at some point, I expect in the future we'll report back. But for now, it's a little bit of an unclear situation from my perspective. I think I could make different arguments as to why it would our statute would trump the bill. I could make other arguments why it's just not. So I think it's just one of those things that time will tell as to whether or not we're actually within it or not. Any questions?
Yeah, Josh, I have just a quick follow-up question on that last piece of legislation you were discussing. Do you know who filed it? Is it a certain city that filed it, or where did it come from?
No, I don't believe so. It was proposed by Representative Anchia. And as you know, he is the chairman of the Pensions Committee. I think it's just a continuation of the statute that was passed in 19. It just tightened up those funding levels. I think it's just a continuing attempt, and I think in some ways it's laudable. It's a continuing attempt by the legislature to recognize the need for plans to get in better shape, and to be honest, for cities to recognize that they may have additional funding obligations that they need to take on. So I think it's just an attempt to do that. I'm not aware that there was any specific city behind it or any group.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious as to where it came from. Thank you very much for that follow-up. Next item, Kelly, and the monthly contribution report, which will turn into the next item after that, will be the board approval of trustee education and travel.
Okay. Thank you, Armando. On page one, well, John's already there. 143 is this intro page. This is the June contribution report, which reflects April data. In this report, there were three pay periods actually during April that are shown here. Just one thing to mention is we are seeing quite a few more vacancies in the police department than we had. They were down 201 officers during April. Fire was over by 48, so there was a net 153 short. I don't know the timing of police recruit classes, but we'll just keep an eye on that. The contributions are still strong. On the next page, 144, you'll see that there were three pay periods again. The floor amount for April was $17.6 million. The hiring plan estimate was $16.2 million. And then the actual comp pay the actual contributions based on comp pay was $17.1 million. So 97% of the floor and 105% of the hiring plan. Since the effective date of HB 3158, we have had the actual comp pay has been 92% of the floor and 101% of the hiring plan. So things as far as dollars are still looking good, and if the city's able to get up to their police officer numbers that they had in here, it will only look better. Are there any questions on this report?
Yeah, Kelly, this is Ken. I think one of the reasons why the police were so low is because, from my understanding, they limited, because of COVID, their training classes to around 20. And I don't know when that might be lifted. If you have any in with or personnel division or training division as to when that might be lifted, and allow unlimited people in a class or less or a lot more than 20, that might, you know, give us an answer as to when the amounts may start going back up.
Okay, well, that's good to know. So I do know that Ann Matthews, who's one of our benefit counselors, is doing or has done, I'm not sure if the date has come, an in-person training for a recruit class. So I'll ask her to find out kind of what the, from her contact to the trajectory is. But they're back to in-person, you know, wanting people to come in person to their classes. So I think that's a good sign.
Okay, yeah, good.
On the next item, the board travel item, there are three new classes that we've added to this list. One, Tech First class and two NC First classes. They're all three in-person classes. No trustee has indicated interest, so we don't need a motion unless somebody wants to add their name as a possible attendee at any of these conferences at this time. Okay. And there's still time in July if you change your mind and want to go to the Tech First class. So the next item is, as many of you know by now, is when we do have a trustee that attends a conference or a seminar, then when they come back, they give a report out for that. So Ken Haven did attend the Tech First annual conference. So Ken, do you want to give a little information about that conference?
Yes, maybe after my report, somebody will put in for the August one, because the Techspurs conference was fantastic. Total 450 attendees. It was larger than the Illinois one, which is usually bigger than Techspurs. They were 2 weeks before their conference. Techspurs board, some of the board members went up to that, and ours is a lot bigger and better, I think. Well, from what they said. A lot of the individuals, money marketers there, everybody said it's just great to get back out again. I haven't done this in 14 months, just to look at somebody in the face and talk them. So there was a lot of energy and excitement in the room. I mean, heck, I even think some actuaries were excited. So I'm just kidding, Siegel, if you're still on the line. But some items that were discussed on the business meeting, a little bit of change in the board members for Texpers. Jim Smith is now the president. Sherry Mose is now the second vice president. Paul Brown and John Jenkins went back to just regular board members. So, I think that's good. I mean, I don't see much of a change, but Jim has a lot of energy, is very involved with legislative action, so I think he'll be a good president, and he'll do a good job there, as will Sherry on the second vice president. She's been involved many years, and she's also involved on the deferred comp side. One of the most interesting presenters, in my opinion, was someone, a local Austinite, by the name of Ari Rastigar. He's a real estate developer down in Austin. Really did a good presentation on the future of Texas. He's definitely got the rock star persona. He's one of the few presenters that I've ever seen that comes with his own entourage, including a makeup artist. So, and he's an interesting read. Can't argue his success. And, you know, some points he made about companies that are relocating to Texas, they're not just leasing buildings in the areas or even building buildings, they're building whole compounds, which, you know, brings in a lot of not only multifamily, but, you know, home ownership too. So that was a good talk. Let's see. Oh, the asset allocation study, I forward that to Gilbert, Ryan, Kelly, and Josh. They've got copies of that. It was pretty good. It was well done by Texpers. 42 of the Texpers plans was involved in giving their weight on it. And overall, the Texpers members kind of beat the actuarial target of 7.4% over the 5 and 10 year period. And so they all did fairly good. Like I said, it's on Texpers' website. I've got a copy as well as the other one. So if you're interested in reading about it, get with one of us or look at the website and you'll be able to read it in full. It's about 37 pages, so it's really good. Already talked about China with Makita, and they were mentioning it. China will be it for emerging markets in Asia. Several presenters mentioned that, as well as even some of the CIOs that were in the audience. So that was real interesting to know. Bob Clauser was there. He's the pension attorney. He's been involved with pensions probably about 40 years. He was giving updates on things that, even though we were away, the courts weren't, so a lot of decisions were made in the court systems on pensions, and he did mention ours, the Deegan case, so that was on his radar to make presentation with. And then on pension funding, how to get more funding in your pension strategies, real good presentation on that. They hit really heavy on pension obligation bonds. 2003, 2011, and I think they had mentioned 2021 should be, well, the other ones were banner years for pension obligation bonds, and the presenter felt that 2021 will be another banner year for pension obligation bonds for a lot of reasons. And Gilbert's comment previously was spot on about, if you do get the funding, they mentioned this also, that you just don't sit it in your fund and just draw off of it to pay your benefits. You're expected to do something with that money and make money on it. So that's where other systems have gotten trouble, where they've just taken the pension obligation money, let it sit there, paid out benefits. Their government entity ends up not funding their end of it, and then they're back at square one again. So those are just some items to look for. But all in all, it was a really good conference. Highly recommend the summer one if anybody wants to go to it. I think it'll be pretty good. Texas did a really good job in putting this together. Any questions? Okay.
I feel like I just attended Texpers. That was a great summary.
Well, Gilbert, I was going to make one suggestion to you. I know you give presentations too, and if you know you want to bring an entourage with you, including a makeup artist, I'd be glad to volunteer Yvette Connie to be your makeup artist. So
I appreciate that. I'll have to bring a hairpiece too.
Okay.
All right. I was going to say, great summary. Appreciate that, Ken. Let's move on to the next item real quick. Kelly, do you want to do your executive director report, or should we go ahead and go on to Brenda with the financial audit status?
You can do Brenda, and then I'll follow Brenda.
Okay, perfect.
Thank you, Armando.
Yep.
Good morning, everyone. I'm happy to provide you with this status update on our financial audit. The initial field work for the audit has been completed, and like last year, it was completed and performed remotely. We have completed about 82% of the original request list from the auditors and submitted them to the auditor team. All of the confirmations have been received except for the legal and actuarial, and those are sent to the end of the audit. Member census data has been submitted to BDO so they can begin their review before the actuary report is completed. Our largest outstanding item, which sounds very familiar, are a couple of investment audited financial statements for Lone Star and the HUF funds. Once we receive the remaining investment financial statements, then we'll be able to submit information to the actuary for them to prepare the actuary report. And once we have the actuary report, once we submit that information to the actuary, it should be about 60 days to the completion of the audited financials. In the meantime, we are, the accounting team and staff is working on the portion of the audited financial statements that can be completed, and we have begun work on the comprehensive annual financial report as well. Are there any questions on the status of the financial audit status? Okay, back to you, Armando.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate that update. Kelly, in the executive director's report.
So I think this is the last item for the regular meeting. So as usual, we have the NCPERS reports for you electronically in the materials. Since the last meeting, we have had 4 open records requests. 3 of those are filled and complete. 1 of them we will likely be sending back an answer to them that we're not going to provide the information they've asked for, contact information for members. So that's what we have outstanding there. As far as the office update goes and reopening status, I did want to let you know that John McBride has resigned from the pension system. He went to do an internship related to his educational path. At this time, we've hired a part-time temporary person to fill in our scanning function, which is a huge thing that we need to do and just got bigger with remote work. We're evaluating whether John's position will be filled or not. It does kind of leave us with limited backup on the phones by not having that position filled, so we're looking at that. We are also looking at filling an investment position that we have in the budget just to kind of round out that staff and give us an extra body there. So you may see that, you'll likely see that posted as an investment. Not sure what we're calling it, kind of a senior level or kind of a, not an entry level investment person, but somebody with some experience. We plan on doing that. The other thing I wanted to do is recognize John Holt and Damien and the whole accounting team for an issue that came up last month. Basically, the night before we were processing the May payroll, we had a technology failure, which did not allow us to process the payroll. So we got to test out our disaster recovery plan, and it worked. So that was good. I did keep Bill Quinn informed as soon as we knew there could be a potential issue. But everybody did what they needed to do, and there were just a few updates to the system that kind of got entered at the last minute that didn't get transferred over, but everybody got paid as normal, and they had no idea, couldn't tell, that the payments were actually processed by our vendor and not by us. So that, I think, is a huge success and a great real-time test of our process. And I want to thank, you know, John and Damien and Brendan, Vicky, and Larissa and Bill for all that work. It was a stressful couple of days there, but it worked well. So that is good news. The other thing is on the CIO recruitment. That posting is out there, has been out there, and we are getting interest, quite a bit of interest, and I'll start reviewing those resumes as early as next week. Are there any questions about anything I said?
The only thing that I have is the office reopening.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. So,
thank you for that. We are still planning on, we have about a third of the office going in every day. Investments is in there consistently on a consistent schedule. John seems to be there on a consistent schedule, and other people are going in as needed. Going into September, I think I'm planning on formalizing a schedule on what that looks like as far as the office goes. As far as the board meetings, the trustees had indicated for the July meeting to do that meeting in person. I plan to have Melissa reach out to each one of you just to make sure you're still okay meeting in person in July. And we're going to put some protocol together about how that would work, whether we're letting the public in or not, are masks required, are they not, those types of things. So we'll kind of put a, I guess, summary of how we think it's going to work and make sure you're all okay with that. And then I'll talk to Bill about making the call for the July meeting of whether that will be, some of the people will be in person. There will always be, or at least until something changes, the intent is, even if some of the trustees are in person, you would have the option to be remote if you want. And we believe the public will be remote for a while. So watch for that. Email and let me know, or Josh know, or Melissa know if you have concerns or suggestions.
That sounds good. Does anybody have anything that they would like to discuss before we adjourn the regular meeting? Is there anything that we might have missed on the agenda? Hearing none, can I get a motion to adjourn the regular meeting?
So moved. Gilbert.
Gilbert, can I get a second?
Second, Ken.
Second, Rob.
Okay. Rob, Tina, Ken, everybody. With a second. Any discussion? Anyone opposed? Hearing none, we will reopen the supplemental meeting. The approval of minutes, I'm sure you all saw those in your packet. Can I get a motion to approve the minutes?
Move to approve, Ken.
Ken, what? Can I get a second? I'll be the second. Any discussion? Anybody opposed? Okay, motion approved. And then I think that's about it. We've already done the Makita presentation. So can I get a motion to adjourn the supplemental meeting?
Motion to adjourn, Ken.
Rob, okay. And second, is that Ken?
Ken.
Okay, Ken with a second. Anybody opposed? All right.